Just before those words were spoken by Jesus and the Pharisees, Jesus had healed a man, given sight to a man who had been born blind. And the Pharisees, a sect of the Jews back then, objected to what Jesus did, especially because it was done on the Sabbath. And dropping some spit on the ground, mixing it up, and putting it on the man's eyes, they believed was work. And so violated the Sabbath. Well, they also confronted the man whom Jesus had helped. And this man, we noticed this especially last Lord's Day evening, brilliantly and laughingly refuted the Pharisees and the way they thought. Jesus found the man later and talked with him briefly, and the man became a believer in Jesus as the Son of God. And then after that, the man believed in Jesus and worshiped him. And then Jesus explained, as Lake just read, why he came into the world. He came into the world for judgment, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind. And there were some Pharisees still hanging out with Jesus, and they wanted to know, are we blind? And then he told them that if you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remains. However, what Jesus said in reply didn't stop there. That's where chapter 9 ends, and so that's where I ended last Lord's Day evening. But actually, the response of Jesus continues on into chapter 10, verse 5. So let's see what else happened. John 10, starting at verse 1. Most assuredly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice. And he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus used this illustration, John said, but they did not understand the things which he spoke to them. Jesus taught, enter the sheepfold by one door, which is the only door. Entering any other way, the Lord Jesus considers that person as being a thief and a robber. The shepherd himself also enters by the door. This way, the sheep can identify him. He would not climb up over the wall or the fence, for that would frighten the sheep. All of a sudden, they see a man coming over the wall, and the shepherd knows that. So he works with his sheep. The sheep, Jesus said, know the voice of their shepherd. And the shepherd knows his sheep intimately, even their names. And if you have ever known a shepherd with his sheep, you will know that that's exactly right. They recognize the sound of his voice, and they recognize their names when called out. They know each other almost as humans know each other. In fact, I've known of a rancher who said it's the same with cattle, or at least with his cattle. I guess he must spend a lot of time with them or something. I don't know. But what do you think when someone uses your name? Especially if it's been a while. Maybe you met this person 3 years ago. Suddenly, you bump into each other again. And he says your name. You probably have two reactions to that. Number one would be the fact that he must have a good memory that he remembered my name after 3 years. And number two, that it would mean something to him to remember my name. And of course, that's how it is with Jesus the shepherd. You know, you want to get to know the person who seems to have gone through some effort to try to remember your name. I want to get to know him or her better. Well, Jesus knows our names. And who knows? He may even have special names for us. As, you know, he did for some of his apostles, like Simon, whom we know better as Peter. And we know him as Peter because that's the name Jesus gave him to reflect the kind of heart or personality he had. James and John, he also gave them a special name. Does he have a special name for you that might reflect the kind of person you are? Jesus said, the sheep follow the shepherd. The sheep spend time with their shepherd so they can know his voice, enabling the sheep to be able to distinguish his voice from that of strangers. In verses 10 through 7 now, Jesus talks about the shepherd and the thief. Then Jesus said to them again, most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved. And will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. Now, just a few moments ago, Jesus compared himself to a shepherd. Now he compares himself to the door, or the gate, by which the sheep enter the sheepfold. Jesus said that thieves and robbers preceded him, trying to steal the sheep. But the sheep did not hear them. They did not recognize the voices of these false shepherds who came along. The sheep knew something was wrong. They, on the other hand, know that everything's okay when they're with the Lord, the true shepherd, because he watches over them and cares for them and protects them. Since Jesus is the door, he assured us we can enter by him and be saved. And then we can go out and come in and find what we need to satisfy our souls. The thief, on the other hand, has no interest in feeding the sheep, but in taking from them. Whereas Jesus came to give us life, life that is more abundant, life that is an experience that we've never had before. Beware of someone who only wants to take from you and not give. Beware of becoming that person. Next, verses 11 to 13, Jesus spoke about the shepherd and the hireling. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. But a hireling, he who is not of the shepherd, who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. Rather than taking from the sheep and ruining their lives, the good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. Risking his life for the sheep, like David did for his sheep. Remember that? Excuse me, on one occasion, a bear attacked the sheep of David. And on another occasion, a lion attacked the sheep. And what did David do? Run and flee? Save his own skin? No. He risked his life and attacked both animals on those different occasions. Because he cared for the sheep. They were his own. They were like family. In fact, my wife was just telling me the other day, I don't know if all vets, veterinarians do this or not, but at least she knows of one here in town that before the doctor will see your pet, he asks a series of questions. And one has to do, is this a member of your family? Is it, there was something else in the middle there, or is it just a pet? Well, with David, he would have said, this is a member of my family. Jesus even gave a parable that spoke of a man who had a sheep that slept in the house with him and was like his own daughter. Well, as you know, I've got three daughters. Hey, you attack my daughters and you've got somebody else to deal with. Well, that's how David was. You attack my sheep, you're dealing with me. That's how Jesus is. You attack my sheep, you're dealing with me. These are my own. We're family. Whereas Jesus said, hirelings care only for themselves, although they give the impression that they care for the sheep. But Jesus said, the test comes when danger arrives. Does he flee or fight? What did Jesus do? Well, Jesus here prophesied that he would lay down his life for us, and he expects us to do the same for him and for the other sheep. A true shepherd would never leave his sheep vulnerable to wolves. Many wolves, from the time the church first started till this day, seek to destroy the sheepfold of Jesus Christ. Do you know how easily wolves can enter the flock? They pose as innocent and harmless sheep, so that then members of the church open their hearts to them and receive them. And then the wolf starts to do his damage. Brethren, in my 28 years of preaching, I can't tell you how many times I've seen that happen. Because many sheep refuse to believe that anyone could be a wolf. And others, going to the other extreme, refuse to believe that anyone could be a sheep. One is gullible and believes any appearance of kindness, and the other is overly suspicious and criticizes any appearance of kindness. We need to be accepting, but we need to be discerning as well. Follow Jesus, and he will keep you from gullibility, and he will teach you not to be overly suspicious. Next, in verses 14 to 16, Jesus spoke about the shepherd and the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and am known by my own. Now please listen to this. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold. Them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. Jesus emphasized what he's already emphasized. He is the good shepherd. He knows his sheep. His sheep know him. And the same holds true for Jesus and his Father. Now I want you to listen here to what Jesus said in verses 15 and 16. Because as I meditated upon this past week, you know, I had one of those moments, you know, where we all have had, where you read through this Bible all the time, you come across passages that you've read who knows how many times before, and suddenly you see something you never noticed before. And I hope I can show you what I notice in 15 and 16. That was just, I just had to sit back and say, wow. Like, I couldn't believe what I was reading. The Father knows Jesus, and Jesus knows the Father. Then, now here's the kicker. Right on the heels of that declaration of intimacy with his Father, Jesus affirmed that he lays down his life for the sheep. Jesus knows us and we know him, but he wants us to see, brethren, the depth of the intimacy we share with him, which is like the intimacy he shares with his Father. To prove that, he announced, he prophesied that he would lay down his life for the sheep. Now, here's what I'm wanting you to get. Look at what he said in verse 15. I know the Father, and the Father knows me, and, verse 16, I lay down my life for my sheep. Do you see what he's doing? We mean as much to him as his Father means to him. That's the thing that got me this week. As we've gone through, you know, now about, you know, 9.5 chapters of John, Jesus has spoken about his Father often. And he has spoken about how they're one and how intimate they are with each other. And now he just told us the relationship I have with my Father and what he means to me, I'll do whatever he says, I'll obey him without hesitation. I look at you the same way. That's how much you mean to me. And I'll do anything for you. Father, I'll do anything for you. Sheep, I'll do anything for you. I'll lay down my life for you. How else could he have said what we mean to him? Brethren, let this sink into your ears and then sink down in your heart and never forget it. Never forget what Jesus Christ thinks about you. If you can't remember anything else from this sermon today, please remember that one thing. Jesus looks at my relationship with me just as deeply, just as intimately as he does with his Father in heaven. Wow. That just blows my mind. Jesus wanted, however, that intimacy not only with the Jewish flock. Now, earlier I said that where he talked about laying down his life for the sheep was in verse 16. That was in verse 15 also. But now in verse 16, he reveals that he wanted and still wants a relationship with the rest of the world. Here he's speaking primarily first about the Jews. But he has other sheep who are not of the flock of the Jews. He's talking about the Gentiles. He's talking probably about every single one of us in here. Unless you're a Jew, you'd be talking about that first flock. But he wanted to bring all of them together into one fold so that they would be all under one shepherd. The great unifier of men and women, Jesus Christ. Speaking about laying his life down now in 17 and 18, the shepherd speaks about his life. Therefore, my Father loves me because I lay down my life that I may take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This command I have received from my Father. The Father loved the Son and loved him further because the Son laid down his life that he might take it again, prophesying of his willing death and self-resurrection. You see, the Father loved Jesus for having a heart like that. Was it easy for the Father to ask his own Son to lay down his life in, as you know, such a brutal way for the sheep of the world? I cannot even fathom what that must have been like. And we know in many ways it wasn't easy for Jesus either. But the Father said, "This is what I want you to do, Son." And Jesus did it. He also said, "Son, I want you to take your life again." And Jesus did it. See, earlier he was talking about how the Father knows him and he knows the Father. The Father loves Jesus and Jesus loves the Father. So whatever the Father asks, whatever the Father asks, Jesus does it. Son, lay your life down. And as you know, he didn't just lay down and go to sleep and not wake up again. We haven't even gotten to that part of John yet. And remember that earlier he said he would do this for the sheep, meaning he would do it for you. Now the Jews and the Romans, and even Satan himself, they all thought that they took the life of Jesus. But no one took it from him. In fact, the Jews, especially the Pharisees, tried several times to arrest him or to kill him somehow, but each time he fled, as we've seen so far. Do you realize how many times that's happened up to this point in John? Let me show you. If you have the handouts, I've got a bunch of verses listed there from the Gospel according to John. I'm going to read those right now. John 5:16. For this reason, the Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to kill him because he had done these things on the Sabbath. But they didn't succeed then. Chapter 5, verse 18. Therefore, the Jews sought all the more to kill him because he not only broke the Sabbath, but also said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. But they didn't succeed at killing him at that time either. Chapter 7, verse 19. Did not Moses give you the law, yet none of you keeps the law? Jesus said, "Why do you seek to kill me? They didn't succeed either at that time. Verse 30, same chapter. Therefore they sought to take him, but no one laid a hand on him because his hour had not yet come. The father hadn't given the command yet, son, it's time to die. Again, chapter 7, verse 32. The Pharisees heard the crowd murmuring these things concerning him, and the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to take him. So you jump down to verse 45. Then the officers came to the chief priests and Pharisees, who said to them, "Why have you not brought him?" The officers answered, "No man ever spoke like this man." Then the Pharisees answered them, "Are you also deceived? Have any of the rulers of the Pharisees believed in him? But this crowd that does not know the law is accursed." So they weren't successful then either. Back to verse 44 it says, "Now some of them wanted to take him, but no one laid hands on him." Chapter 8, verse 6. "This they said, testing him, that they might have something of which to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and wrote on the ground," and so on. They couldn't get him either in that situation when they presented the adulterous woman to him. Verse 20 of that chapter. "These words Jesus spoke in the treasury as he taught in the temple, and no one laid hands on him, for his hour had not yet come." And then one more, verse 59 of John 8. "Then they took up stones to throw at him. But Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by." They couldn't do it when they wanted to. So then, considering all those passages and what we just read in John 10, 17, and 18, we can conclude that when they did arrest him, put him through several trials, beat him, scourge him, and crucify him, it was because he did it. He allowed it to happen. It was at that time the Father said, "It's time." So he did it. The time had been fulfilled. His hour had arrived. The Father gave Jesus a command to lay down his life and to take it again. And Jesus obeyed his Father, dying when the Father said to die and living again when the Father said so. Let's look now at the last part for today, 19 through 21. The shepherd and division. "Therefore, there was a division again among the Jews because of these sayings. And many of them said, 'He has a demon and is mad. Why do you listen to him?' Others said, 'These are not the words of one who has a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?' When the Jews, in particular, the ones who were still with him," going back to chapter 9, verse 40, "when they heard what he had said in all those verses we've just looked at, they were divided. John told us the form of the division. Some heard the words that we've just read and thought, 'Oh, he's possessed with a demon,' or 'He's out of his mind.'" Have you noticed how we do that to people, especially on that last one? If we don't understand someone's behavior or their words, we say, "He must have mental problems." You know, we do the same thing that they were doing back then. So, the people mentioned there in verse 20 questioned, "Why listen to this man? You know, he's either evil or foolish," in their way of thinking. But others disagreed with those conclusions and declared that demons do not so speak, and that demons do not open the eyes of the blind like we saw back in John chapter 9. Demons don't have that power, and if they did, they wouldn't do it. Because they want to blind people. They don't want us to see the truth. You know, the demons are kind of like that guy, you know, the beggar came up to him and says, "You'd have a quarter?" And he said, "No, and if I had one, I wouldn't give it to you." That's how demons are. "I'm not going to help you. If I had the power, I wouldn't do it for you." So Jesus can't be possessed with a demon. And he's not out of his mind. We all need to hope that he's in his right mind, because it means our salvation. Well, these people have their conclusions. The question is, what do you conclude? Well, Don, I think he's the Son of God. Are you ready then to do something about it? You know, that's what it took with me. The man, the elder in the church who taught me, his name was Earl Harrington. He was teaching me some things, and before we got to the conclusion, I was ready. But I didn't have enough gumption to say, I want to get baptized. But maybe he could see that I was getting to that point, and he just asked me, Don, you want to do something about it? And I said, yes. And I became a Christian on that night, November 2nd, 1976. I'll never forget it. And maybe you're at that point now. And I'm asking you, are you ready? If you're ready to be baptized, we're ready to receive you. Come forward now as we stand and sing.